This American Life producer, Diane Cook, spent years putting real stories about real people on the radio. But on the side, she was writing surreal short stories. Her debut collection is called Man vs. Nature. It's a finalist for the Believer Magazine's Book Award and the LA Times Book Prizes. Doug Gordon sat down to talk with her.
Diane, I've heard that one of the ways you come up with the premises for your short stories is you imagine things that happen in the animal world and transpose those into our world, the human world. Can you tell me about that?
I like to think about humans on a kind of a scale of wildness. And I think there's an instinctual element to us that's, you know, very alive, but we call it different things. We kind of toggle between kind of an instinctual reaction to things and a rational thinking reaction to things.
Yeah.
And I really like the play in between those. And, you know, we call it like anger or passion or fury or fear when we act on an instinctual level. But I think of it as like a wilder part of ourselves that isn't gone and lost from long ago. It's still in us. We just mediate it differently now, and we, you know, apply it in different ways based on our civilized life. So when I watch animals or I think about animals in the wild, I'm looking at them to kind of inform how I act in the world or how I respond to things. One of the stories in the book plays a lot on maternal fear, and it's just from watching like animal documentaries where animals are like constantly having their young stolen from them.
Yeah.
Or their young don't make it, and so they have lots of babies.
The opening story is called Moving On, and it's very poignant and very powerful. Can you tell me a bit about this story?
Yeah, Moving On, again, was just a kind of thought experiment of what happens if we didn't have a choice. Or we had one choice in life. We got to make one set of choices in life. And then after that, if it didn't work out, we were kind of at the mercy of a system that was put in place to kind of like take care of us because we hadn't succeeded in some way at regular life. So the story is about people who have been married, but then for whatever reason lose their spouse. They've either lost their spouse to death or sometimes occasionally just things don't work out. And once you've lost your spouse, you get put into a shelter, basically, where you are prepped and kind of placed and kept out of society until you're over your grief and you can successfully manage a new relationship. And that new relationship is chosen for you by the people who work at the shelter. And these shelters are everywhere, and it happens for men, women, and children. But my story follows one woman whose husband died young before they'd had any kind of real kind of foothold in the world. No children, you know, just kind of starting out. And she's put in the shelter. And the story is really about her process of kind of an incredible, bewildering grief. Like, I had this beautiful thing. We loved each other so much, but it's gone. So now what? Like, my life feels a little out of my hands.
Now would be a great time to have you read an excerpt from Moving On.
Yeah, so in this section that happens pretty early on, our narrator has just arrived to the shelter, and the story's told in kind of almost diaristic dispatches, and she is going over what kind of day-to-day life is at the shelter and kind of what the different materials are that they're given and the different things that are expected of them in the shelter where she's been moved to in order to help her move on from her grief. I'm supposed to pretend our wedding day was lonely and that rather than feeling love and happiness, I felt doubt, dread. It's all very hard. But they say it's helpful in getting placed. What I find funny is that since my husband died, as he was dying, really, I hadn't considered that this might be hard. I thought it was just the next step. My case manager says that this is normal and that the feeling of detachment comes from shock. She says that if I can hold on to it and skip over the bewildering grief that follows, I'll be better off. The grief-stricken spend more time here, years in some cases. Practice, 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 she always says. We're each given a framed picture of a man, some model, and I take it back to my cell and put it by my bed as instructed. I'm supposed to replace my husband's face in my memory with this man's face while being careful not to get too attached. The man in the photo won't be my new husband. The man is too smooth. His teeth are very straight and white, and there is a glistening in his hair from gel that is hardened. I can tell he probably uses a brand of soap I would hate the smell of. He looks as though he doesn't need to shave every day. My husband had a beard. But, I remind myself, that doesn't matter now. What I prefer is no longer of concern.
That was great. Thank you.
Thanks.
This story is very heartbreaking, and at the same time, there's this kind of Orwellian brainwashing going on. The state is trying to fast-track the act of grieving in a very clinical and very bureaucratic way.
Yes. Sometimes that's what it feels like to me. Or I feel this, I don't know, that there's a pressure for us to kind of like put our best foot forward when it comes to loss and just, I don't know, kind of smile through it in this way that just feels false to me and always did. I wrote the story a few years after my mother died, and so probably enough time to kind of just process it or begin to at any rate. And I remember all these stories I would hear. It always seemed like grieving with grace was really valued, whereas I was grieving like just like a brat. You know, I was so mad and I had so many feelings that like nobody else maybe in my family seemed to share. They all kind of handled it much better than I did.
You grieved longer?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I still grieve in this way. Whereas my dad, say, you know, her husband, you know, really made it, you know, like kind of a goal to like, well, I'm still alive. Let me have a life still, which is admirable and probably was very hard, but was also kind of an amazing thing to watch and kind of parse and get my head around as I was kind of in the throes of a really, I don't know, I don't want to say like, it wasn't a negative grief, but it was just so, it was so intense and it felt like it was never going to lift.
And has writing the story helped it lift at all? Was it cathartic in some way to write the story?
Yeah, it was. You know, I mean, I think it had lifted at that point too, but it was more the story was helping me kind of think about the decision to move on doesn't have to be, it can be a decision that you're not even ready for, but you can still make the decision. Does that make sense?
Yeah, oh, it makes a lot of sense. And I can really relate because my mother passed away in June of 2014. And you mentioned about your dad saying, well, I'm still alive. And that's the thing that I find difficult for being still mm-hmm. alive and having known my mom, you know, as you knew your mom your whole life. And then all of a sudden she was there your whole life and then she's gone. And then your life afterwards seems it's really hard to deal with. And it's really kind of very nightmarish and very sad. It has been for me anyway and continues to be.
Yeah.
You spent 6 years as a producer for Ira Glass's very popular public radio show, This American Life. I'm curious, how did working on This American Life shape your approach to writing fiction?
It shaped my fiction writing it basically taught me how to tell a story, which I think is a hard thing to learn. I think very few people do it naturally, mm-hmm. but it taught me how to tell a story. So writing sometimes more often is an exercise in just excavating emotion. Which also, like, was kind of a part of my job at This American Life.
Man versus Nature, your collection was shortlisted for the Believer magazine's Book Award, and the Believer described your book as a funny, scary, sensitive examination of the brittleness of human existence. And that, I think, really captures it. Is that what you were going for?
I mean, I hope so. In my dreams, yeah. It was dreamy to hear people respond to the book in a way that both got the darkness and understood kind of the beauty behind the darkness that exists in the book. Because I never look at life thinking it has to be all sunny. I think the best things I learn from life come from kind of the weirder, more hard to categorize moments.
That's Diane Cook. She's the author of Man versus Nature, and she talked with Doug Gordon.